Hello, world, and welcome to my show, Sight for Sound, Life Coaching with a Twist. It is February 12th, 2008, a beautiful, gorgeous day in Los Angeles. So I am your host and life coach, Janet Kaleri. Thank you for being here. And so what does Sight for Sound mean? Well, Sight for Sound, sight is when you see things as they truly are. You make sound choices in life. And what is a coach? I think a coach is someone who tells you what you don't want to hear, who has you see what you don't want to see, so you can be who you have always known you could be. Thanks for being here on this lovely day. I have a very fun, special guest today, Joe Romano. I'll be bringing him in shortly. And just to remind you, BBS Radio has over 18 million listeners now, and it is growing exponentially. So thank you, guys over there. Hi, Don. Okay, so if you would like to call in, we have several options for you to call in. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. That's Canada and U.S.
Okay. Hi, sorry
Hi,
about that. Hi, pleasure. I just want to let your audience know. I don't, that isn't the number of listeners. That's impossible. I wouldn't give out that kind of figure. It's very modest. That is out there. I don't know who brags about those kind of listening numbers, but we don't. We may have that kind of hits, traffic, website traffic, and it's hits. It's not unique visitors. Unique visitors is under 1 million a month. Okay.
Okay.
Hits is not visitors. Hits is not page views. And page views and hits and all of that certainly, and I'll tell you as a fact, certainly is not the number of listeners. That's only a fractional percentage of website traffic. So, yeah, it's wouldn't be even close to that because you'd be paying almost a dollar production cost per minute. Okay.
Well, that's a great clarification, Don.
Yeah,
thank you.
And 1 million listeners would cost you 1 million a month. So anybody who brags about that kind of internet listenership, then they're paying about $1 production on that or somewhere even under that. But then they must be massively huge as a corporation to outlay that kind of cash.
Okay. Surely.
Okay, just thought
I'd
let you know.
I appreciate the clarification for the audience.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
You bet. Have a great show. Love your show. Sight for Sound. I always listen to it.
Thank you very much. All right, folks. So you heard Don clarify, and you can find out more information on the website, bbsradio.com. So I was giving out the numbers for you to call in. It's important for us to hear your thoughts, and we're here to answer any questions for you on my coaching show. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And if you have Skype, we've had some people call in from Japan using Skype, and they're using the 877 number. All right. Well, my purpose is igniting human potential. I think that everybody has a unique gift to offer to the world, and whether it's individually or in a family or a team or a corporation or an organization, I believe that when we know our purpose and we are on purpose, that we feel a great sense of joy. And what a world it would be if all of us were together on purpose. And I would like your help in making that happen. My services include one-on-one coaching. I also teach leadership and personal development to corporations and organizations, speaking engagements, and anything that services an individual or a team to increase their productivity and confidence and communication effectiveness. Well, today my wonderful guest is Joe Romano from San Francisco area. Joe and I have known each other since 2001. We participated in some of the seminars for personal development and growth with Context Associated. And I talk about Context Associated a lot because that's where I had significant change in my life and have created some amazing results in my life. So again, thank you. Thank you very much, Judy Revell and Randy Revell, who is no longer with us, and their daughter Elizabeth Revell and Phil Holcomb and Lori Marcoux. And I am forever grateful to all of you. And Joe Romano and I, so we met back in 2001, and Joe is a dear friend. He's funny. He's a very funny guy. He's a comedian. He's a chef. Just a beautiful, beautiful person with a huge heart and compassion, and really would take the shirt off his back for just about anybody. And he learned from an early age that growing up in an Italian family meant that the kitchen is the most important room in the house. His mother, Josephine, hello, Josephine, she's always expressed her love for family, friends, and her Sicilian heritage through her cooking. And Joe is also a commercial aircraft mechanic and professional stand-up comic. He started helping his mother in the kitchen when he was six and co-authored The Extraordinary Cuisine of Josephine. The Extraordinary Cuisine of Josephine is a recipe book that has some scrumptious, scrumptious recipes. So, let's see. He has a cat so old that she's eligible to vote. He can take apart a 747 jetliner and put it back together again. And he believes that leadership means showing up authentically such that a team is inspired. And that's exactly where he teaches his Sicilian cooking classes, and that's where he cooks from. So what do cooking and comedy have to do with coaching and change and leadership? Well, one thing I think, or I believe in, is that humor humanizes. Humor, if humor is in any work environment, any environment at all, it tends to take away a level of fear and anxiety. And from that place, people tend to show up more fully as who they are. I also think cooking and comedy, in terms of Joe specifically, has to do with him stepping up to leadership and seeing life and projects and creative endeavors as opportunities versus obligation. I think when we see things as opportunities versus obligation, we tend to go for it. I know Joe has a great desire to have people laugh and to laugh, and I know he has a great desire to cook and to keep his family heritage going on, and that desire, I believe, is greater than fear. And I think when our desire becomes greater than our fear, that's when magical things happen. And no further ado, I welcome Joe Romano. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Janet. Good to hear you. I feel like I'm in a coaching session again with you. So hearing your voice and hearing you talk about all the things and just some of the things you lay down. Yeah, so it's just seems just like one of those. But I really like what you just said about the comedy and weaving that in with the cooking, because I know when I've done some cooking classes, when people start laughing right away, or when I can show up just as who I am, people feel more attracted to asking questions that they want to ask. I know when I've had that feedback from classes that I've taught, that some people are intimidated by professional chefs, and I'm not a professional chef. I was self-taught. I just learned cooking watching my mom cook, and so I know that I think I'm more approachable when I just open up and genuinely show up as who I am, and you know, I'm not afraid to make a mistake, and you know, I even talk about making mistakes in my cooking, and mm-hmm. so weaving that those little mistakes in with, like, if you burn something, how to recover from it, or you know, just making people laugh a little bit in the beginning of a cooking class, I think people are really, their guard is down, then they're more willing to open up and ask things they want to ask about some of the dishes.
Mm-hmm. So what are I agree there, and what are some of the questions that they ask?
Well, like sometimes they ask questions about just the different styles of Italian food, or you know, it might be a particular dish that people are wanting to know about, whether they can, you know, take that meat dish that I'm showing with a New York strip steak, can they cook that with like a chicken, or could they use any other type of meat with that, or would that be an acceptable dish to, you know, to substitute a fish in? Or even sometimes people who are vegetarian even want to substitute, you know, like a portobello mushroom or even vegetables in where I would have a meat
mm-hmm.
dish. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, some people, and the people always ask me all the time, you know, about the aircraft thing, and you know, because that's how I make my money, that's how I fund my Sicilian cooking business, is through the aircraft maintenance industry. And I just think it's the end of the day, they ask about the cats and things like that. So it's, I get all kinds of questions. So I don't even
mm-hmm.
remember, like, cooking class questions to food questions. They can ask me anything about aircraft maintenance or feline behavior if they want to.
Well, that is great. And we worked a little bit together a year or so ago, and that was the point in which you decided to take off with this cookbook of your mom's, and it was kind of sitting around for a while, and you decided your desire was really great at that point, and you made a commitment to go for it. So to tell the audience a little bit about the cookbook and the history of it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my brother kind of spearheaded the whole idea for the cookbook back in the early 90s, I guess it was. Because while we were all going to college, my sister and brother and I, my mother and father would type out recipes on index cards and they'd mail them to us, and you know, we would cook them from time to time with the different people we were, you know, roommates we had in college. And as we got out of college, we started like misplacing some of these recipes, and so we'd always ask them for, you'd send us that spaghetti recipe again, or send us that, you know, the ravioli recipe again. And I think they were getting tired of typing them and sending them, and we didn't want to lose them permanently if one of, you know, my parents had passed away without giving us the recipes. So my brother got the idea for everybody to just kind of sit down and discuss what some of our favorite recipes were. So we kind of submitted those, and then he sat down with my mom, and we all talked about what we thought needed to go in the book. And one of the things that was hardest to do was to quantify some of the you know, the quantities of food in there, because mom always was like, oh, it's a little bit of this, it's a handful of that. And so,
yeah,
you know, we needed to say, Mom, you know, people are going to need, you know, a spoon, a tablespoon or a teaspoon. You know, we've got to get exact. So that was kind of, you know, fun to do that and just have her sit down and go through some of these recipes. But it's called Extraordinary Cuisine of Josephine, and it's got her eighth grade graduation picture on the cover. It's really a cute picture, and it's a really nice book. And it's full of her recipes, my grandmother's recipes, my dad's Calabrese recipes, and yeah, it's all of these family treasures. And we'll gladly part with it for $15 if anybody wants to buy it.
Okay.
It's for sale on the website. And but what happened with the book? I it was just kind of hanging around. My mom had sold them at weddings and funerals, and you know, out of the trunk of her car, and she would engage anybody who, you know, wanted to listen to her talk about the cookbook. And she sold almost 1,000 copies, you know, just by doing that over a period of like 5 years. And so it got to be the early 2000s, mid 2000s, and I just, nothing was happening with it. It was just kind of stagnating. And so and at that same time, I had was working at United Airlines on day shift, and I had been doing stand-up comedy in the evening. And I got bumped to a swing shift position, so I could no longer do the open mic comedy circuit because I was working in the evenings. And some friends of mine suggested, well, look, why don't you just combine the cooking with your cookbook, teach a comedy cooking class. You can have comedy, cooking, and promote the cookbook. And I started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, that's a pretty good idea. So I approached a couple of grocery stores that had cooking facilities in them, and they tried it out, and this class was sold out. And so it was a really great platform to do the stand-up comedy and weave the stand-up comedy in with the cooking and the family heritage and, you know, tell stories about my family and, you know, some jokes about cooking and jokes about food. And you know, I mean, it just worked really, really well.
Great. Joe, would you be okay to speak just a little slower?
Sure.
So make sure our listeners hear every single word that you're saying.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
I do have a tendency to talk fast, yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. And so just going back, I know. Going back a little bit, just give us more information on the time when like the moment that you decided that you were going to really move forward with your purpose in grow, you know, just holding on to and honoring your family heritage. And what was that moment for you? Was it a pivotal moment?
Yeah, I think after I had done my first cooking class, and I realized that the people, it was a sold out class here in San Mateo at Drager's, and people were just, they wanted to buy the cookbook, and people were standing in line to have me sign the cookbook for them. And that's when I kind of like realized nobody's ever stood in line to have me do anything for them. And I was just really floored that, you know, this was a potential that could exist, that there were people that were that interested in it, that they would actually pay for the book, and they would pay to have me, you know, they would stand there and wait for me to sign it and talk to them about it. And so it was just a real interesting, like the light went on, and I thought, wow, this could really go somewhere. And it just kind of fed from that moment.
And at that moment, you pretty much had no idea in terms of how to do it, but you knew that your desire was greater than stopping yourself on the how. Is that true?
Right, and I knew that I would need a lot of help along the way to do it, because if I hadn't done it already, I would have done it already if I would have had all the tools with me to do it. So that's when, you know, I started leaning on some friends, or just talking to friends and using their services, who were good in website design, you know, who were good in business card design. I mean, I recall you helped me design a business card waiting for a plane at the airport one day, and, you know, just showing me how to use them, because I can sit there and stare at, you know, Office Publisher for 2 hours and not figure out how to put some of the things together that I want to put together in a business card. So, and that can lead to a lot of frustration, and I think a lot of people just give up when things take such a long time to make happen. And so that, I've kind of learned patience through that, not only with the business card design, but, you know, just making shelf, you know, designs for products that I have, and, you know, making flyers and things like that. It's just, you know, just be patient, and I enjoy learning as I go. And, you know, and I've learned to talk to people about how to do things and ask them. I think that's always been
Go ahead.
That's always been something that I've had difficulty doing, is asking for help. I think it comes from, that's the negative side of the cutting, the other side of the blade of the Sicilian heritage is very proud and, you know, want to do everything themselves, and, you know, I can do it myself. Well, being half Sicilian yourself, you know, you've probably seen that in your relatives or even yourself.
Sure.
That there's a desire to, all I right. can do this.
Okay, and let's talk about that a little bit in terms of leadership and playing a big game, having a vision and committing to something that is really important to you. It's kind of like the President of the United States has Congress, because it's such a huge role, it's such a huge game that the help is required order to make it happen and to make it work. And do you think that being a leader and playing a big game and going for a big vision would work as well if you didn't ask for help? And do you think it would work as well if you did not have yourself surrounded by like-minded people?
Oh, no. I definitely enjoy being surrounded by people who are all vectored in a similar direction, you know, like kind of like a magnetic, like the end of a magnet, how everything's lined up and those people are all moving forward because I feed on the energy that is around me. And, yeah, that definitely helped out a lot, not only in terms of the technical support, but the emotional support and just direction that is there. Just like, it's like sticking a straw into the, just the energy of the universe. Like, it's like sticking the straw into a Capri Sun and just sucking hard on all the energy that's there around me. And I get energized. You know, I feel that it just gets channeled right into me when I do that. And that's a thought that I hold in my head when I get ready to do a stand-up performance or when I get ready to do a cooking class, to calm myself down. I know that energy's out there, and it's an old technique, a friend of mine, Noel Murphy, told me about, who's done a lot of stand-up comedy, and it's an old technique that entertainers have used for decades of just visualizing that, plugging into that energy of everybody who's gone before them and all the creative energy that's out there, not only, you know, comedically, performance, artistically, but everything that's there. And, yeah, it does help out a lot.
That's wonderful. And so after your first cooking class at Drager's, which was sold out and people were in line for an autograph, then there was the pivotal moment then where you decided to move forward and share with the audience some of your products and some of your classes. Joe has this great class, and it's called Girls Night In. So share more of that, Joe.
Okay, that's a product. When we created the website, we started thinking, well, we need to have some things on here to offer so that people can say, yeah, I want to do that, and rather than just attend a cooking class. So what the Girls Night In started out as was actually a way for me to meet women. My friend who helped me design my website, Noel Murphy had said, what a better way for you to meet women than to be the center of attention at a party where you're the featured chef. And so it kind of took off from there. And what Girls Night In is it's an idea of a way for women just to stay in for the evening and, you know, I will come over and cook for them. So started out just with women only, and I would bring the whole Sicilian cooking experience to their house for the evening. I'd bring the wine and appetizers and some of my Sicilian caponata that I make, really nice antipasto. I'd have Bed Bath & Beyond product giveaways. We'd have drawings.
I'd do a mini
cooking demonstration of a couple of the items that we're going to be eating. Everyone would sit down. Usually about 10 to 13 people works really well. And I would serve them the dinner, and we'd have more product giveaways while everyone was eating. And it was really the product giveaways, not only does it give someone some kind of real funny little gadget to take home, but it's a real good comedic break because people can just, you know, kind of improvise with some of the products that we give away and just have fun with them, talking about them. And then after dinner I get people in the living room and I do about half an hour of stand-up comedy, and then we have dessert and I do the dishes, and then I go home if they want me to. I do the dishes and everything, yes.
Wow.
There was even one class where I did some Italian language classes for them, so they really liked that.
And do you have this class just in California, or if women wanted, you know, if there was a group of women in another city who wanted have this experience?
I pretty much have gone anywhere to do it, up to Seattle and back in St. Louis, and it's not just limited to women. It's kind of changed over the years that I've been doing it. It's more a couples thing now, where you know, for Christmases, at Christmas time, it's become a family thing. I've done a couple of family get-togethers at Christmases, and it's mainly it's morphed into a couples evening. And people seem to really like it because couples really want to come over and enjoy each other's company together and, you know, give each other the night off. And it's a real special treat for them to, you know, experience that Italian food and all of the things that come with it in that one evening. It's a nice night out for the couples.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you're from St. Louis, Missouri, and it seems that your classes and your other product, which is the caponata, are pretty popular out in that area.
Right. That's where I grew up in that area, and my family still lives there. And the caponata is, I know I've mentioned that before, but I'll tell you a little bit more about that. I used to give...
By the way, I just want to tell everybody that it is scrummelicious. It is the best caponata I have ever tasted.
That's good. Yeah, I think it's the best I've ever tasted, too. What it is it's a eggplant antipasto. It's got chunks of eggplant and red peppers and celery, tomato puree, black olives, green olives, sugar caper, red wine vinegar, and it's a spoonable appetizer just onto some toasted Italian bread is really good. You can put it on top of pasta if you want. You can put it on top of grilled chicken or fish after it's cooked, just as a topping right before you serve it. I used to give it away as samples just to promote my cooking classes or to promote the cookbook at, you know, at a food and wine festival or at Drager's or just at a farmer's market. And people always wanted to buy the bottle that I had right there. And I had to tell them, you know, it's not for sale. That, you know, the cookbook's for sale. You can buy the cookbook and make it yourself. And they go, no, we want to eat it. We don't
want
to cook it. And so some old man stuck his finger in my face one day, and he said, you know, kid, he goes, you're missing the boat. You should be selling this stuff. He goes, you really got a good product here. And so I started producing it. I started making it on my stovetop, and I would bring bottles of it into work here and sell it from my toolbox at United Airlines. And people liked it. I couldn't keep up with the demand. It took me 4 hours to make 6 bottles at home, so it would take me a couple of evenings to make a case, and I would bring the case in, and it would be gone. So I started thinking, you know, I think I might be onto something. So now I get the product mass-produced up in Sonoma County. This company called Sonoma Gourmet makes it for me, what's called a co-packer. So I've gone over the recipe with them, and we've ironed out everything that needs to be made to duplicate it, and just give them a phone call, and 4 pallets magically appear. So,
great. I'm going to pause for a moment here and just give out our phone number again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. That's Canada and U.S. And if you're on Skype, you can call in as well. And I have Joe Romano here as my special guest, a professional comedian and founder of Sicilianaire. And we would love to hear your thoughts or questions, so feel free to call in. Okay, Joe. So now you're this guy stuck his finger in your face and said, you ought to be selling this caponata, and you began cooking it on your stove, and it was going like wildfire at work, and then you decided that it was that popular that you were going to have it mass produced.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you go through that process? So it seems like such a huge project to take on. It's like here you are and you're coming from your heart and you're just doing mm-hmm. something from a place of love. And that's where I think all success comes from is creating that type of joy for yourself and other people. And here you were with your case or two of caponata, and it was gone in an hour. And so from that point on, knowing it was going to be a big project, how did you go from, you know, small quantity to mass produced?
Well, I just did a lot of research on the internet and found out, you know, what I needed to do as far as from the FDA standpoint, because that was who. While I enjoy pleasing myself and enjoy, you know, just giving out the product and seeing people enjoy it, and then that's gratifying, I wanted to keep the FDA happy because I didn't want to end up in jail or fined. So they had a lot of parameters that I have to jump through to make that happen. concerns about product liability insurance and licensing and certificates, and it's a maze of things to jump through, and there was not any one place to go to find out, yes, you need this, 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 and this, and this is the order you need to get these things procured in and proceed with this step and this step and this step. So it took me several months to figure out, you know, what I actually needed to get done. And it seemed that every time I would make a phone call, I would find out I needed to spend more money on some type of certificate or permit or license. And it was like all these people wanted a piece of the pie before there was any piece of the pie to get a piece of. So I, you know.
Sure.
I'm not used to doing that. I was just used to running the business out of my pocket. And so it became apparent to me that, you know, I needed to get, you know, a little bit more structure to what I was doing. And so I approached the people at Sonoma Gourmet, the co-packer that I use. And my girlfriend Gretchen and I sat down with them, and she's into business and sales. And so it was nice to have that type of person sitting there with me when I was negotiating with the representatives of Sonoma Gourmet about how this was going to go, because I, you know, because I'm running, used to running things out of my pocket like a mom and pop operation, and these people.
Hey, Gretchen.
So Sonoma Gourmet deals with, you know, business and, you know, salespeople all day long, which is right up her alley. So that was helpful having that on board, having her on board with me for that, and then. Just, I don't know, and the coaching that I got from you was very helpful as far as just constantly reminding me. I don't want to say constantly as though it was, you know, like a Chinese water torture or anything, but it was just a little spark about move ahead on this. You said you were going to do this. Where are you at with this? And that's one thing that I think the really good thing, benefit that came out of the coaching that I had with you was the reminders, you know, and knowing that I was going to have a call from you in a couple of weeks is a pretty good reminder to get moving on things, because I wanted to have something to tell you, you know, as my coach, I didn't want to disappoint you. And so
we know that's what the coaching is not about pleasing your coach. It's about,
well, I know, but I didn't want to, I wanted to have some progress, you know, for myself.
Okay. Well, that's the point I'm getting at. So
yeah.
It was helpful for you to hold yourself accountable and have somebody else hold you accountable for what you said was most important to you.
Right. Well, I would not have done any good to please you and then have no result on this end. So, yeah, to say that is
I'm both the same thing. I'm making the point for the listeners so that 'cause they're, you know, there are personalities that love to people please, which is just fine. And in terms of accountability and creating something that is really important to one, it's important to do it for yourself and then for your purpose, rather than to, you know, to please one certain person. And but I agree that the coaching is a consistent reminder of one's commitment and propelling one forward in a sort of in a step by step process.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And I used to think the coach was just someone that told you what to do, but that's not what it is at all. I thought it was somebody, I just give you some money and you tell me what to do. But,
you know, and that wouldn't, in terms of ownership, which I have talked about, on my coaching show, the attitude of ownership is, works well when the coach asks the client a question and then the client comes up with the answer on his own, and that's when they really own what they say or what they're thinking or what they're doing.
Right.
And
it's similar to someone doing a task. If someone keeps doing the task for me, whether it's a mental or a physical task, if I know that someone is going to keep doing it for me, I'll just let them keep doing it until I get tired of doing it. And I never learned to do it myself. I never appreciate what it takes to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
Or develop the tools to do it. So yeah, same thing with when I, you know, learn what mechanisms are needed to make this business, this part of the business work, including the research and making it happen, then yeah, I think, oh, that's not that hard to do. And what's the next step? Then I think the next step becomes easier.
Yeah, true. And you did really well at seeing this process as an opportunity. And when you were in times of frustration and maybe feeling like it's an obligation, you were very good at reminding yourself that it is an opportunity. Do you agree with that?
I've gotten much better at that over the last 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Yes.
Good.
And that's very true, yes. When I reframe it and say, you know, here's a great opportunity to learn this or to get, even in relationships, personal relationships, it holds true. So it's a pretty powerful thought to be holding, you know, not only in a business world, but in a personal world. And it just cuts across a lot of lines of life. So it's really good to know, or just to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. And what other classes are you teaching lately or in the near future?
Yeah, well, lately I've kind of gotten away from doing the demonstration classes, you know, where I stand up there and cook for 2 hours, and those are fun to do, and I have the opportunity to present a lot of material to people, and a lot, not only a lot of cooking material, but family material and comedic material, and I do like those. But I've gotten into the hands-on classes now with Sir LaTab down in Los Gatos, California. And it's essentially like 18 people show up, and they're seated, and we have some appetizers, and I talk to them for about 15 minutes, and everyone breaks up into groups and starts cooking. And it's like a madhouse when you have 5 recipes going at the same time. You know, and they're all parallel running, you know, from start to, you know, midway through to everybody needs the oven or the stovetop to completing it and plating it. It's really fun. It goes fast, and I get to walk around and talk to everybody, you know, in their individual tables. And I like that. I think I like this approach better because everybody actually gets to learn how to make the food. They get to touch the, you know, when we're making the cipolli, the piece of bread dough with the anchovy down the middle, everybody gets to shape one. Everyone gets to feel what, you know, how to do this, how to make the ravioli. So I think people come away from it with a lot more confidence that, yeah, this is really simple food. This is something that, you know, my grandma and my mom, who were not culinary trained chefs at all, can do. So, you know, I think they learn how to do this themselves, and they feel confident doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, at least that's the feedback that I'm getting.
Great. And what are your plans to do with this hands-on class? Are you going to spread it out?
Yeah, well, you know, I've Gretchen and I have even talked about just doing it at her house, just making it an evening, you know, bypassing the places that do it, you know, that just give me a small little chunk of the money for the evening and actually try to make this profitable. So, and I think I'm learning that for a business to stay with the lights on and everything, I need to make some money. So that's a very good lesson to learn, too, that, you know, while I don't want to be all about the money, I can't give the product away or there will be no product to give away.
Sure.
You know, there's some point where a person has to start running it, you know, like I said, not out of their pocket and start looking at it in terms of how can I do this to make this thing work and function so that this could become my full-time job, that I could actually get, you know, make income off of this. So,
How well do you think you're doing with that?
I'm making a lot of inroads into it. Right now, I'm at probably 40% of where I need to be as far as revenue goes to make it occur. And it's, I talked to the people at Costco the other day as far as having Costco carry some of my bottled product, the caponata that I'm selling. But they have a thing where they want to be sure that they're not overstressing my business. So they will only do business with a company where their order will not exceed 20% of that company's business. So right now, if Costco would call me and, you know, order a semi-truckload of caponata, that would be like 400% of my business rather than the 20% that they want it to be. So I'm up against a little bit of a dilemma there as far as how to solve that. So growing the business at a small grassroots level is what I would prefer to do. That's what I have to do in order to, you know, to get in with a company like that. And that's what the representative at Costco and Trader Joe's told me, that, you know, once you get this developed and get this path of functionality built up, then we'll talk to you about, you know, bringing you on in small chunks. So it's definitely got potential, and, you know, I'm still working on it, and I'm still, you know, doing the toolbox thing and farmer's market, so I'm having a great time doing that.
And the farmer's market, is it in the San Francisco area? Are you going up to Napa Valley?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the one up in San Rafael this summer, and then Pleasanton's got a big one, and over in Santa Clara County, quite a few of them. I enjoyed that. When people taste the product, it's really incredible. People taste it, and they go, God, I got to have this, and they usually buy a couple bottles. So it's a good way to talk to people and just get to meet people face to face, and I really do enjoy that. I've got a website. Not only is it my website, but I'm on this Gourmet Food Mall, which is an internet specialty food area. So you can get on there. It's called gourmetfoodmall.com, and my Sicilian Air company is on there.
So let's expand more on, you were just speaking about connection, and I know that's one of your favorite things to do is connect with people and find out about, you know, find out who they are and where they come from. And in terms of that, how has your business, Sicilianaire, how has that been a platform for connection?
Oh, well, you know, when it seems every time that I cook, I always set off something in someone who's in the audience or at the party or wherever I'm at, or even, you know, doing a farmer's market, and I'll go, this tastes just like something my grandma made, or I remember these neighbors who made this thing, or, you know, this is just like my grandma's fluff cake, or, you know, they always tell me something. It reminds them of something of their past that they really hold dear to their heart, and I think that there is a lot of life that's lived in a kitchen. You know, I'm not just saying that because it sounded good, you know, in my intro or anything about the kitchen being the most important room in the house. I mean, that's where our life was lived. You know, decisions were made around that kitchen table, you know, high level decisions about, you know, what was going to happen with our family, and, you know, punishment, and everything was doled out right there at the kitchen table. So it's a real important place. And, you know, a lot of times you go over to people's house and the first thing they do, I know my Aunt Carmela and my Aunt Mary they'd drag you right in the kitchen and sit you down at the table, and they would have some food in front of you even if you weren't hungry. You could be telling them,
and they'd
no,
be
no,
like,
no,
manja, manja, manja.
Yeah, that was the way they connected with people, and that was the way they, you know, they showed their affection for people. And, you know, it's a nice thing to do. And I think a lot of people, their grandma and grandpas were like that. And so there's still a real deep connection to that that feature of people's lives, and they really enjoy that. And so, yeah, I hear that from a lot of people. I think I'd love to do another cookbook of families' recipes. Not only, you know, I want to solicit everybody who I know and just get some of their favorite recipes from some of their grandparents, and maybe even go out and interview or get, you know, talk to the grandparents and get, you know, part of their story, maybe have a little page about these people's, you know, what their life was like, and it's something that they're interested in, and just to feature all the different differences that people have. And I think that would be fun.
I think that's a great idea in terms of connection. It sounds like you have not only created that sense of connection for yourself, but you are creating it for others, in their enthusiasm and delight around the food and around the table, I imagine that they are passing it on, and it would be wonderful to see a cookbook like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's got a story to tell, and it seems like every recipe's got a story that comes with it, and so it would just be, I think, a fun thing to do, and the book would almost write itself, because I'm sure, you know, people are very proud of some of their dishes that they make. I mean, I see that all the time on the Food Network when they go to these small towns and, you know, talk to families, and everybody's, you know, there's a lot of really good cooks out there. You know, it's like, it's just a matter of, you know, how far do I want to take this, and you know, where do I visualize it going? I think, you know, it could pretty much go as far as the energy that I put into it. You know, it could...
Sure.
If I decide just to collapse and not do anything, then that's where it's going to go. But if I decide that, you know, this is someplace that I really want to take it and I want to move in this direction, and I'm finding out that sometimes I do get to an energy crossroad there where, you know, doing the farmer's market, scheduling the girls' nights in, scheduling the, you know, the demonstration classes and making the caponata, you know, while I enjoy doing all of those, some of them serve me better, and I get more bang for my buck out of doing a few of those or one or two of those, rather mm-hmm. than spreading myself so thin that I don't really do any of them with any type of efficiency. So that's been a real interesting lesson for me to learn, you know, about...
Yes, being focused on, you know, one, two, maybe three endeavors so that you have enough energy to put into them and bring them to completion or sustain them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that became evident when I did about, I think, my third or fourth girls' night in, because it ties up a lot, about 13 hours of a day gets involved in doing one of those. And so when I finished and I was back home after 12 hours of work, and, you know, I realized this is the money I had left over, this is the amount of hours that I put, it was like below minimum wage. And I started thinking,
mm-hmm.
you know, why am I doing this? There must be something that I'm doing. I'm doing this for another reason other than the money. So, and it is.
I believe that that's where success happens. I believe that people manifest their dream or their vision when they come from their desire and their place of love, rather than just soul focus on the money. But
mm-hmm.
as you spoke to earlier, it's important to bring the practical side into a business as well.
Yes, there needs to be some type of a balance. And you know, I learn as I go, and you know, I learn what works and what doesn't work, and you know, it's a process of finding that little how to navigate my car through this, you know, food world adventure that I'm on. And so I don't know. I mean, but I'm doing all kinds of interesting things, like, and taking chances. Like, I, you know, send bottles of caponata to Rachel Ray and a little note, you know, letting her know what's going on with me. And just, who knows, it might stick in somebody's, you know, idea, and they may say, hey, let's bring this guy on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk to this guy. You know,
and that didn't seem like a risk to you, did it?
No. I was exhilarated writing it out, you know, typing up this thing and sending it, and I was really, it's almost like putting a message in a bottle if I was Tom Hanks in Castaway and just putting it in the water and seeing what happens, you know. I got that
yeah.
kind of an exhilaration from just, you know, it literally is like shooting an arrow into the air and just seeing what happens.
And you weren't attached to what she thinks about you.
Oh, no, I don't know. That's fine. If I hear nothing, that's fine, too. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just, as long as I keep having more arrows in my quiver to shoot out on my bow, then everything will be okay. I'll just keep shooting and see
yeah.
what happens.
What is the tagline on your business card?
Oh, that until I was 7 years old, I thought my name was Here, Taste This.
Say that again.
Until I was seven, I thought my name was Here, Taste This.
Until I was seven, I thought my name was Here, Take This. Taste
yes,
This.
Because that's what
great.
My mom used to say all the time. I would be her little kitchen taster. So they had she cooked a lot, and I was a very fat kid, so I was as I said, they rewarded and punished with food, so I was a really good
yeah.
kid. And my weight showed it.
Yeah.
One thing, you know, I noticed about this Italian food is that it's really, really good, but it's really rich, so I only eat like small, you know, be moderate about it. And I think that's the way my grandparents used to eat. You know, they were my grandpa Romano lived to be 101 years old, and, you know, he worked in his garden all the time and you know, was very healthy. So,
wow.
You know, it's healthy food, but you gotta, you know, but he always drank a lot of wine. He drank, you know, the red wine with it too. So I think there's something to be said for that as far as
mm-hmm.
keeping himself healthy. And
yeah, the red wine. And are you still doing your comedy shows outside of cooking?
No, I haven't done any of those in quite a while. It's interesting. I have been going to comedy clubs, but the reason I go is because the people that I used to do the comedy with at, you know, like we would do the Brainwash Cafe and open mic comedy nights where we didn't get paid anything for it. You'd get up and do your 7-minute set, and that was it. And it was just a sign-up sheet. A lot of those people that I did it with back in, you know, 99, 2000, 2001, they are the opening and middle acts at clubs like the Punchline and Cobb's Comedy Club. So they've stuck
mm-hmm.
with it. And it's really, I'm excited for them and inspired to see that. Because that tells me, you know, the more I stick with this and move forward in the direction that I want to go and just don't give up, you know, and work hard
mm-hmm.
that really good things are going to happen. I mean, they already are. I had no idea, you know, if someone would have told me 4 years ago that I would be doing what I'm doing now with this company and have the, you know, the bottled caponata out there in stores for sale and for sale on the internet and, you know, have the cookbook going and Sicilianaire aprons and this whole logo and the website and everything, I would have said, you know, that's not going to happen. I wouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that combining your two passions together is really working for you, and mm-hmm. that you were at some point you were open-minded and enough to see that oh well, if I combine my comedy skills and I combine my cooking skills and they're both passions of mine,
mm-hmm.
something might happen here. And
yeah.
it's really turned into a wonderful company and Sicilianaire, and I really think you're making such a great impact on a lot of lives.
Oh, thanks. And it's fun to express the creativity through the company, just as, you know, not only what happens in the classes, but, you know, when I do the private things or when I go to a farmer's market, I'll have my two boards set up on the side, these big pegboards with pictures of my family and little captions underneath it, so people can be entertained while they're there too. They're not just sampling my food or buying a product. I want them to see, you know, what my family looks like and see some things about my relatives. And I even have a couple of the stories on the poster board that are linked up so that they tell a story so people can, you know,
mm-hmm.
read and kind of get a grasp of some of my family's humor and some of the things that have occurred, you know, going back to when my uncles were young kids.
That's great.
Yeah.
We have 1 minute left, and I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
Do you think through starting your company, Sicilianaire, and staying committed to it and seeing it as an opportunity and watching it grow, do you think that your level of confidence and productivity have gone up?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, my confidence is just, you know, it's amazing, you know, how just doing some of these classes and taking steps in these directions of creativity and, you know, making a decision, making things happen, and creating something out of nothing, what that does for my confidence and just the way I present myself, not only when I'm doing the classes, but in a lot of other areas of my life. People, friends of mine have said, yeah, you're looking better than you ever have. You know, you seem to be brighter than you. Your face is, you know, you just got a great look. Your eyes, people always say that. Well, you even said that about my eyes, that just
that's
that I'm more present. I'm showing up more than I
great.
Did in the past. And I think that, yeah, the confidence is definitely brimming on that.
Well, that is good news. I'm really excited for you, Joe. I feel privileged to have known you for six or seven years and to have watched you go through this process and build this business straight from your heart. And I'm really proud of you, and I'm grateful that you took the time out to be on the show today. And if anybody wants to find out more about Joe, you can go to josephinecuisine.com. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, josephinecuisine.com. And you will find more information on Joe Romano, or just go on my BBS radio site here, and the website's there. Wow. All the best to Joe.
If they wanted to do a Google search for caponata, I come up in there too.
Okay, great. Caponata, Google search. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, it's very nice to hear you and spend some time with you. I really enjoyed it.